Good point. But on the other hand, Cubans are Spanish speaking.
Right.
So, but what I did find out was the reason that they set up this tent city was because of a federal court decision which ruled that you cannot criminalize poor people in public spaces. And that it was a huge settlement for, with respect to homeless people that had their possessions seized by police, were actually, you know, branded, or they weren't branded, they had stuff written on their wrists, that they were, they're kind of mass processed simply based upon the fact that they were in public spaces and sleeping. And the decision, which is called the Pottinger decision, ruled that you can't do that unless there are legal places for people to be. And the reason that the point I'm making was that for 5 years in jurisdictions in Florida, it has been legal for homeless people to sleep outside. Police have not always been respecting that right, but in some cities they have, and based on conversations I've had with social service providers, people did not rush to those cities. It's also true, for example, and you'll probably get some callers calling in on this soon who know more about it than I do, State Senator Farr, who worked on the homelessness committee, or is he a representative, I don't know, a local congressional person, his view was that, again, homeless people do not migrate from one area to another because the laws are a little easier. Although it is true, however, that, for example, people are migrating away from Berkeley and San Francisco because of massive harassment there. So you might say the opposite is true. If Santa Cruz wanted to push harsher laws, they could force people to leave the area, but Mike.
Well, you just got done saying a couple minutes ago that Berkeley lifted the camping ban, and
no, Berkeley didn't lift the camping ban. Santa Barbara did. Santa Barbara lifted the sleeping ban. It still had a camping ban, but
the sleeping ban didn't Berkeley.
No. Well, Berkeley lifted what's called the sitting ban. That was back in 1994. It was put on hold. But the sitting ban is simply has to do with sitting in public spaces during the day. It doesn't have to do with sleeping at night. Berkeley still has a sleeping in your vehicles ban.
Berkeley was very tolerant of homeless people.
It has been until the last couple of months.
All right, and yeah. That's a good example. I mean, they were much better than an average community to homeless people, and even the bastion of leftist tolerance, Berkeley, reached the point of burnout. And so the point I try to make is I'm not out to bash the homeless. I understand that any of us could end up homeless, and I really don't want to get down on somebody who's already down on their luck. But
gotcha.
I do want to say that there is a certain amount of personal responsibility that somebody has to take for themselves. And when I hear the homeless complain, I never once yet, in all the years I've been hearing this, have heard them talk about what they have to do for themselves. I have never heard you or any other homeless advocate urge homeless people, for example, who are camping in the woods, to clean up after themselves. Nice, spend time in the woods trying to do habitat restoration. And I'll tell you, we're pretty disgusted by all these revolting homeless campsites. It's not just the campsite itself, it's the fact that they have not even made the minimal effort to minimize their impact. The last time I was out there, I stepped in shit, and I had to deal with that because I didn't realize it at first, and so I smeared it around, and it was outside somebody's trashed-up homeless campsite.
Caller, Jim wants to
I can tell you where there's a homeless campsite right now with hundreds, literally hundreds of gallon wine jugs empty just in a big pile, some of them smashed, some of them not. Would you like me to tell you where that is right now? Maybe you'd like to go out there and clean that up, Bob.
Well, let's consider that, but you have a reaction
for
sure,
let me speak on that one. So,
what?
Let me give you a little statement on that one. I've been up to numerous, which I'm sorry, but I won't tell you where these campsites are because it would be just an invitation for the rangers and the police to come in and steal all these persons' belongings and harass a poor homeless person.
Right. Get your point.
At these campsites, these people not only do they clean up after themselves and leave no mess, but they go down to the fact of cigarette butts are put in their pockets. I know right now, junkies who are living out there. And I think junkies should be helped, and they got problems. But I know junkies that got campsites out there that they carry their cigarette butts in and out in their pockets. They leave nothing whatsoever in the forest except their sleeping bag and their tent. And so you have run across one or two, and what you're doing is you're saying all the homeless. Well, I've gone across.
No, I must tell you,
15 campsites right now where they carry their cigarette butts in and out in their pockets.
Caller, that's how clean they are. Let me ask you, caller, how many? Give us your estimate of how many in the last month you've run across you consider to be unsightly or very dirty campsites.
That wouldn't be.
The last
that
year?
Wouldn't be a very. Significant thing for me to say, because I'd have to quantify how much time I've actually been in the woods, where, what I've, and
in the last year, how many?
I don't go out in the woods looking for homeless campsites. I mean, but you could just go up Highway 9 in the Poganip right now, and I can tell you where I stepped in the shit, if you like.
But how many times has that happened?
Oh, it happens quite often. I mean, the closer to town we are, the more it happens.
Let's say once a month?
Oh, it depends how much I'm in the woods. And whoever was just saying what they're saying, I know there are responsible homeless people that try to minimize their impact in the woods. One of my best friends happens to be precisely that kind of person, okay? But I don't see the rest of you encouraging fellow homeless to assume that kind of responsibility. And I think it would really be good for you, good for them, and good for your image for you to start talking publicly about the personal responsibility that homeless people have if they want the community at large to feel more compassionate towards you.
Okay. Here, let me.
Hold
on 1 second, caller. I'll publicly come out right now. You want a statement like that, you've got it. My name is James Nay. And I'll publicly go on the record right now that every single person, not just the homeless, but every single person with that cigarette butt out the window and that hamburger wrapper out the window has a responsibility. This is Mother Nature. We live on a world that is the world kindest world there is. Mother Nature is a goddess. And if we don't start treating her like that, we're going to lose the place we live. And it's absolutely right. Every single person in the world has a responsibility to clean up after themselves and try to make this a better world. And I'm glad to shout my name, James Nay, and shout that I support cleanliness and the removal of trash from our earth.
That's great. I hope that's not just a one-shot deal there, but
you can ask anybody that knows me.
In the future, I'll be hoping to hear homeless advocates repeat this message on a regular basis until we don't see such trashed-out campsites.
Well, let me say this.
This is something homeless people could take the initiative to do, and it would do wonders for the perception that the rest of the community has of the homeless.
Sure, it's
and,
hard. It's
and
hard.
I can give you another example here. I can take care of myself, but I was having a cheap lunch at Denny's, and this guy comes up and he wants to bum beer money off me, and I ignored him, and he wanted to go out in the parking lot and fight because I ignored him, and so I went out in the parking lot, and I guess he thought I wouldn't do that, but I did, and so he wouldn't come out and fight. But the point is, if I get treated like that, I can understand how somebody who can't take care of themselves gets treated by homeless people trying to hit them for money.
I think it's really important. Obviously, it sounds like you ran into a bad situation, and one can't justify it. But let me say this: it's really easy, and I think your point is well taken. One bad experience can create a stereotype with a lot of people. But I'm not
talking about one bad experience, and I am more tolerant than the average person here. All right.
Well, are you saying that you think generally homeless people challenge you to fight, get drunk, and harass you? Is that what you're saying?
No.
Well, then it certainly is not your typical encounter.
No, but it's not it's not only one example.
All right, let us say the atypical encounter, because that's not your average encounter, right?
No, but it's not just one.
Okay, I'll grant you that. I'll grant you that it's not just one. What I'm saying, though, is if you consider, for example, black people seeking their civil rights or Hispanic people seeking their civil rights, you got these kinds of stereotypes that, you know, oh, you got these drunks, these lazy people, these dirty people who mess up the area, and indeed there are some people who do. But, you know, you don't say that civil rights should wait for everybody to get real clean and pristine. I mean, there are some things that people are entitled to from the word go, and this is how I view it. And that's why I put a lot of energy into emphasizing people's civil rights. Even if people are littering, give them a littering ticket. If people are harassing you in the parking lot, you know, hey, that's a form of assault. And I mean, there are laws against that. But don't make it criminal for people to sleep or to protect themselves from an environment that's freezing in the winter. I mean, that has been my view. But with respect to what you say about it being important for people to respect the environment, homeless, and I would go with James, non-homeless alike, you know, actually one of the local activists, Scott Graham, who spoke on the air, and of course No Guns, another activist who hasn't spoken on the air recently but has often come out for this, actually want to set up programs in showing people how to camp lightly on the earth. And that's one of the things I think the city council could endorse. They could actually fund a program where people could go through this process. In fact, I could see that people could get permits for camping once they've gone through this kind of program. And I completely agree with you. I think people should respect the environment. But I feel more important than that, the political system has to respect the rights of people, or otherwise, why the hell should they even bother to respect the environment? Because they're constantly spending their time hiding
from
the cops anyway.
Because the environment is not the political machine that they
have
a grudge against.
You and I know that. But I mean,
you aren't telling them that.
Well, what I'm saying,
they should figure it out for themselves.
I agree, of course. But I'm saying that if you're spending your time dodging the cops, if you have to worry, if it's illegal anyway, then your respect for, you know, the general guidelines of society tends to diminish. And I'm saying that if we want to...
I'm not even talking about the guidelines of society. I'm talking about respect for nature. And for you to say that it's okay to dump on nature because you got a grudge against the cops or society...
No, don't put words in my mouth. I said...
Well, you're saying that it's understandable.
I said people are more likely to pay less respect to the environment if they're spending their time hiding from the cops and they don't... And they feel that they have to, that it's all criminal what they're doing anyway, than if there is a legal situation.
Well, that kind of sloppy reasoning really undermines a lot of support from me, I'll tell you, because that doesn't cut it. If somebody doesn't have any more respect for something that they have power
over,
like
the environment, I'm saying people are likely to have more respect.
Why should they turn around and expect somebody else to respect them?
If you respect people, you're more likely to be respected. And I'm saying that when the law and the society shows so much incredible entrenched disrespect for poor people, then it tends to spread, and it spreads to how people regard the environment as well. I mean, I just think that's true.
Well, as I said earlier, I didn't have any kids, and this is another thing about the homeless. They never, and their advocates never stress the importance of not having kids when they're discussing their rights and their needs and their expectations from everyone else. If you can't afford kids, I'll be quite blunt here, don't have them. And it's a horrible Nazi thing to say, but I'm going to say it.
I'm not going to challenge you on that. I'm just saying that I'd like to get some stats as to whether, I suspect homeless people probably have less kids than the population generally, but I don't have any stats, so I can't really intelligently discuss that. But can you sum up anything you want to finish saying? Because I want to get on to the next caller.
Yeah, that's fine. What I want to say is, again, one community can only do so much before it becomes a magnet. I have had homeless people say, so what if a million homeless people move here? Well, I'll leave you with that.
All right. Well, thank you, caller.
All right.
And you are tuned. Ooh, boy, the phones are ringing. To Free Radio Santa Cruz, 427-3772 is our studio line. You may have to keep dialing if you get a busy signal. Don't give up.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're on the air.
I was on the air before, and I just had some brief comments about the magnet effect.
Yes.
Comment of the last caller.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be nice if the community were renowned for good works? And if the magnet effect proved true, wouldn't that be of interest to the broad public? Wouldn't it have a dramatic impact on the country as a whole and on the world as a whole?
Yes, in a word. Anything else, caller?
That's really what I wanted to get across, is that the magnet effect, if there is truth in the issue of speaking in other than coarse terms about the, quote, the underprivileged, then if the magnet effect is true, then it should not be, we shouldn't be afraid of it. Maybe it's time that this issue was raised to the point where it cannot be suppressed. And maybe the way to do that is with a magnet.
That's a bold approach, caller. Anything else you want to add?
Thanks a lot, Robert.
All right.
Nice show. Great show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, again, my view of the whole magnet effect is to say, let's consider the experiences of other communities. Has there been a magnet effect when sleeping ban laws were lifted? No, in three communities I know about. Now, maybe the callers know about some other communities. Maybe Mike Rotkin could give me some figures I don't know about. Here's another incoming call.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Good afternoon, Robert. It's Roxanne.
Ah, you're calling in, Roxanne.
I'm trying. I'll get off the phone if I start coughing.
That's fine.
But this is an excellent show. However, I was really listening to the gentleman that called before that had all the gripes against the homeless. Mm-hmm. There's absolutely no way you're going to change somebody's mind. I don't think, because all they can see is the negative are the people that hang out. Are real public when there's thousands of faceless, frightened, homeless people who are not only cleaning up after themselves because they don't want to be found, but are living like hunted rabbits. And I think that to take, in a way, so much time with someone who's already disgruntled, you could not change that person's mind if you tried. He faltered every time you asked him, how many times have you found a campsite like that? He couldn't tell you. It wasn't once a month. It probably happened to him once. And it was a terrible experience. But because of that now, he's not open. I think for people to be afraid that the homeless will come to our community, you know, let's even say it's valid. Are we going to let people die this winter because we're afraid that more people might come? That if we affirm light and say that the less fortunate among us, we're going to take care of, we're going to shepherd, that the fact that a few more may come and we'll get a reputation for actually being a kind community, that will justify letting people die this winter?
The answer to the city council, of course, is yes, because they've refused to expand shelter, they've refused to take special sessions to end the sleeping ban, and they have nothing on the January 5th or 12th agendas. But I would hope that our answer is no.
Well, I would just hope as a community, recently I was getting gas at a little tiny station on Lower Ocean Street, and one of the people gave a homeless person some change or a dollar. The person inside at the cash register was not the owner and not the proprietor, I mean, not the manager, and he was a nobody. Came out and started screaming at the person who gave the dollar to the homeless person. Don't do that here. What the hell is the matter with you? These are people with wasted lives. They drink themselves to death. They have nothing going for them. Now, the homeless person is still there. This person was so totally demeaning to the whole process. First, to the person who of free will gave their money. I always figure when I give money, it's not my business how that person spends it. If they said, I need money for food, and I gave them money for food, the rest is up to them. I don't care if they go buy a bottle. I don't care if they put it in their veins. I know that might sound really crazy, but at the point that I've given that money, I know that I gave that person the opportunity not to go hungry that day. What they did with it was their own business. But to have someone come out and yell at a person who has free will, can do what they want with their money, and all of these horrible things. I have never gone back to that gas station. I think this is the ultimate cowardliness. The people who can get up and tell you their one bad experience. I mean, I've been giving money to the homeless for years. If I have enough to share, I will do it. And I've had some bad experiences. So what? They certainly do not outnumber the really nice experiences I've had. And since I don't expect people to say thank you or be grateful, I actually sort of, it's sort of a non-experience, you know, what I'm saying?
Yep.
It's just, here's a dollar, I have it, you can have it, and I go on. I don't expect somebody to kiss my feet. And it sounds like this guy's ready for a fight even at Denny's, you know? He's going to go out in the parking lot and show this homeless person. It's like, you know, his personality shines through. I think we need to be really kind to the homeless, and I'm worried about them this winter. And I know that I can't get well, and I have a shelter from a virus, so I really worry about the people that are homeless and sick. It's an extremely bad winter.
It is, and it's as we know, I was about to read some clippings from San Francisco, shortage of space for homeless families. This is in the San Francisco Examiner for December 21st. More than 100 await shelter despite city's best efforts. And of course, in terms of homeless deaths, there are now 164 deaths this year in San Francisco.
It was 157 last week, so that gives you an idea how many people are dying a week.
It's gone up. Yeah, that was the latest figure, and this is a record. This is up 65-67% from last year in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we don't have the figures in Santa Cruz. I hope that somebody could compile them for us.
I'd like to know why we don't have figures for here. I would really like to know.
Because we have a disorganized homeless advocate group, and is one of the reasons. San Francisco actually, I think, responds to pressure from groups like the Coalition on Homelessness, although they also have been keeping those figures since 1987.
Also, I'd like to say that I also believe that the local figures are non-existent, because once you have figures, then you have to have accounting to those figures. And it's much easier to slush things off, pass things by, you know, as long as you're keeping this as a, well, we don't know, we can't say, this guy is miscellaneous. A lot of things can be on the budget for miscellaneous. Once you start getting hard figures, then you have facts, then you have to show where things go. And that doesn't work if you're giving out facts and figures.
Well, the other thing that I wanted to point out, and of course some of our listeners already know this, is that we are coming into the seventh monthly Don't Sleep Tonight night, tomorrow night downtown. We have a kind of every month try to dramatize the realities of what people face outside under the anti-homeless laws. That is to say, the sleeping ban, the blanket ban, and I've got to say it, the rest of the camping ban, which makes it illegal to put up a tent against the rain. I mean, most of us have been pressing just to end the sleeping ban and the blanket ban, but that still means you're going to get plenty wet at night if you try to defend yourself with a tent, because that's still illegal in spite of our attempts to get city council to do something about just setting up a campground or a parking structure or a public building. We can't get these people to open up any of this stuff or even to put it on their damn city council agendas, and it makes me pretty upset. But tomorrow, as I said, is Don't Sleep Tonight night, number seventh monthly one. This time we're going to be, the theme is, My Car Is My Home, Leave Me Alone. People are going to gather on Pacific Avenue at 5 o'clock for a meal. You can bring your vehicle and park if you want, or you can just bring yourself. We'll be in front of Bookshop Santa Cruz. And then around 11 o'clock, we will be having coffee out of cars, parked in vehicles. And some people perhaps will be sleeping in their vehicles downtown publicly. Hopefully people who have houses, because the people who have vehicles have to risk their vehicles if they want to sleep there. And that's kind of a heavy risk. Some of the vehicles may not even be properly registered. Some people have warrants for such big crimes as sitting on the sidewalk and sleeping outside or whatever. So that is tomorrow. For people who want to help with Don't Sleep Tonight night, please give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. There's operators standing by, or at least there's a recording machine standing by. I think there actually is a live person at that line now. If anybody wants to help with that, if you got a vehicle you want to come down and help park, and if you want to provide coffee between the hours of 5 tomorrow evening and 11 and thereafter, join us. We're also thinking of festooning our cars with signs and, you know, end the sleeping ban, let's not be crazy about this, it's freezing weather outside. You know, a car is a little warmer than outside. Actually, it's considerably warmer if you have a working car. So, you know, you want to come down and provide a little shelter, because city council has decided to go on vacation because Mayor Byers has gone south for the winter. Well, maybe the rest of us have to take the responsibility that the city council and its great liberalness is refusing to do. I'm sorry, Roxanne, I had to do a little pulpit there, a little soapboxing. But
well, Robert, I come, but, you know, I'm really worried about the feces on the street.
Yeah, it's true. We don't want to step in the feces.
So, you know, I've come, but my understanding, you know, from the merchants and the public is that there'll be feces in the streets. So, if, when you can get your homeless well trained to not potty in the streets, would you just give me a call, Robert?
I will, but we're trying to get the homeless to carry colostomy bags. That's going to be our next attempt.
That's true. No more messy potty days.
Well, or possibly operations, putting them on liquids with catheters that reach back to appropriate places.
Well, and then we could sterilize them.
Sterilizing might help,
you know,
too.
As long as they're under the anesthesia.
Well, so, something has to be done.
Yeah, I think that the gentleman before you would support that, too. Would be the gentleman with two callers before me.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'd probably support that and help you raise funds. He sounded like a real activist to me.
Well, we'll see what happens. Thank you, caller. Is there more you want to say?
No.
Thank
but
you.
Anyway, thanks for all the good work you're doing, Robert.
All right. Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And boy, the phones for the first time in history are ringing off the hook.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're on the air.
It's just me, Uncle Robert. I sort of have my voice back.
Oh, this sounds like dead-on David Silva of the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban.
I'm also calling in response to the three callers ago. I'm calling in response because I want to encourage that kind of dialogue. I understand what Roxanne's saying, that some people just have their minds made up. But we really are in this new level of the dialogue that we're in now, Santa Cruz. We really are having to deal with fears and resentment. Fears, you know, by the residents and the business, and a lot of resentment by people who've had to live under human rights violations that are imposed by police that have acquired an arrogance that's been damaging to their soul because of the existence of this law. So we, you know, we should encourage and invite these people to bring those fears to us. I have a suspicion that maybe he stepped on the shit only once or twice, and that he really doesn't know the reports that you can get even from the park rangers themselves, that the vast majority of the homeless in the Greenbelt areas are doing a very good job of keeping campsites. I would say probably the closer campsites around the freeways and so forth may be a little more irresponsible. But generally, over and all in all, they're certainly much more responsible than what the impact that the tourists have in this town. And so he needs to come to see this and come to know this reality. He needs to come to know the reality that the magnet theory is really nothing more but a theory, and it is one that's based only in fear and not in fact. You mentioned Sam Farr's congressional committees belong to the McKinney Commission. And the reports from every community and from all activists and organizations, legal, social service, advocacy groups, all have brought the figures into the congressional record that people do not move for reasons of, you know, better laws or even better services. They don't even move for reasons of better services. And we have, I think for the first time in a long time, Mike Rodkin on KSCO admitting that people don't move for reasons of services. They do, according to him, move for reasons of sleeping bans. He does not seem to want to let go of that one. It's really important that when people like him call, that we do really engender dialogue, because it's only going to be a creative solution to the problems that we face. We have a lot of people. You mentioned No Guns and Charlie Phillips with his Eco Village plan, plans for having a creative solution to the camping part of the injustice. And he should make no mistake to think of Santa Cruz as some kind of idyllic, progressive haven. It's really, really not living in reality. If you just go to just practically any other community, this sleeping ban law that we have is the harshest in the nation, and it does have to go. We do have to restore human rights to Santa Cruz, and the process of restoring human rights is a reconciliation process. That means that the homeless and the residents that are in fear and the business people in fear have to sit across from each other at tables. And actually, this is starting to happen. The past few weeks, there have been many, many, many more meetings of people concerned and talking about this issue for the first time in a long, long time. This law has been on the books for a long, long time, and it's done a lot of damage to people's lives. Maybe eventually we're going to get to talking about rent control. The the absentee landlords and the way that the economic system of this particular town is set up is ruining people's lives. Grandparents have their children driven out of town. They can't see their grandchildren because of these laws. The eviction epidemic is something that has to be controlled. There's a lot of things that we can do, but only as a community. And this person is a part of our community. When he spoke up with his fears, he's part of the community, so we really do have to address them. And I think things like Don't Sleep Tonight Night do bring the realities of harsh and cold to people's faces, and they do work. So congratulations on following through that. I'm still a little sick, but I'm going to try to make an appearance tomorrow, and I hope we get some sense of unity. Maybe some business people will come out and greet the demonstrators, and we can start talking like a town, like a community. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, David.
Any comments on that, James? We have in the studio with us James Ney, who has been working with as the manager of the Armory program until he was fired. Maybe we should kind of carry that story through to its conclusion before we run out of time, James. You were telling us how you... Actually, you didn't tell us. How did you come to get hired, and then what did you learn in your job?
Okay, well, I came to be hired because of, like I said, putting in applications there, being around all the time, and constantly, got a job for me. Actually, to let everyone know, I actually have the credentials of I am a licensed armed guard, an EMT, advanced first aid, advanced CPR. I've worked with crowds of 300,000, 5 years supervisor Sears Point Raceway, Sonoma Marin County Fair, the Sonoma County Fair, Apple Blossom. I could go on and on. I've worked with major groups. I've done three movies, Grand Avenue, worked with Scream, and Ron Howard's Inventing the Abbots. So I have a background in dealing with people at the security, and I've worn a uniform, I've walked in the apartments, so my credentials spoke for me when the armory manager job came up. In fact, I was actually told at the time that I was the first choice for armory manager by Mike Bustico himself.
Mike Bustos?
Bustos, I'm sorry. Everybody corrects me on that. I'm very sorry, Mike. I've got a bad time with your last name.
Karen Gillette, not Karen Gillette. Although that's a nice Italian pronunciation. I like
it. I don't know why. Last names I'm always really bad with.
So Mike Bustos thought you were number one choice. And you've been a biker as well.
Well, yeah. When I was young, I spent many years actually riding with the Devil's Disciples. I've been a carny. Okay. I live my life now, for everyone that cares to know, on a simple thing that I think we all should, is a kindness a day to a stranger. If we can do one kindness a day for the rest of our life, we're doing something special. And it don't mean money or anything else. A smile can be a kindness. Walk down the street and say hello to people. Be kind. Don't call someone because they're a little bit different than you a wing nut, which is a favorite phrase down there, or strange, or mentally retarded, or, all these trolls. I'm sorry, but I've had an officer say that about my child, and I'm sorry. The worst thing you can do is call a person a troll. I think that's an awful, evil thing to say about a person just because they're different or they don't have a home.
When were you offered this job, getting back to the Army?
2 weeks prior to November 15th.
Well, how did that go?
Well, they had interviews, a large list of people, and actually Mike was very kind to me in that I could not be there on the day of the interview because I had to be in Stockton for a hearing about my daughter because my ex-wife had trouble and my daughter got taken, and so I had to show up for the hearing. Not that I didn't want to, but Mike was very good about the fact that I missed the interview day, came in the day after, and they had a special interview just for me to allow me to take the job, and it was at that interview that he did tell me, which made me feel very good. I'm sorry, it's been a long time since anyone's told me that I was a first choice. I glowed for a long time. It feels good. We need to say kind things. So it went from there. He said, please don't tell anyone I said this at the time.
You're spilling the beans.
I know. I'm going to tell it all now because it was supposed to wait, and because he was putting up a list of who was going to be what and who was hired.
What did the job involve that you eventually got? How much did it pay?
It paid $8 an hour, 5 hours a night, and it entailed me starting at 3:30 in the afternoon at 115 Coral Street, signing people up to take them to the armory. We'd sign until 6 o'clock. That's when the first shuttle bus would generally arrive. Between 5:30 and 6, the first shuttle bus would arrive. At that time, I had
Well, there is also two monitors hired at the same time. I don't know their hourly wage, that worked with me. And at that time, I would turn over the signing in of people to go up to the armory to one of my two monitors, and I would load a busload of my choice as the first bus. After that, it was how you were on the list, whatever, you know, they got you on the buses. But the first busload was my choice, and I filled my bus by choice of children, babies, aged, handicapped, and then a few people that were volunteer workers. Because we would get up there and we would open, there's a container up there and we've got some little army mattresses in there and blankets and tables, and we'd get it all set up. So when the people came, there was a table, and they'd come up to the table, give their name, they'd get a mattress and a blanket, and then go get them, set themselves up with a space.
Now, there was no food at the armory, but though the churches did provide some extra food in addition to the 4 o'clock meal, right?
True. There are two groups of women that would go to churches, two groups of men that would go to churches. At those churches, those people, those 15 that went to each of those churches, so all together 60 people, would get fed at the churches. No, there was never any food ever donated for the armory. I got to tell you, though, the Kurt and Sonny, lot managers of HCRC, I mentioned before, would generally try to get some kind of donations in, and they'd make up some, even if it was just peanut butter and jelly and bread, they'd give me stuff to take up there and feed these people aside from the 4 o'clock meeting. Great about that. I mean, anytime somebody bring in leftovers from a party or something, they'd be real good about sending it up to the armory so these folks would have something to eat.
Now, regarding food, you and I had a conversation, actually, which sort of sparked a lot of the discussion we've been having today, about the process by which food and other donations did or didn't reach homeless people. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. There is a practice at the homeless center, at the Human Resource Center, 115 Coral Street.
Homeless Services Center?
Homeless Services. On the building in front, it says Human Resource Center. Either way, whatever you want to call it, it's
Gillette Center.
Maybe, right. It's a great place, though. For those that are homeless, know that there is a meal at 8 in the morning of oatmeal, sometimes coffee. It's always decaffeinated coffee because they feel caffeinated coffee upsets people. At 4 o'clock, there's a nice meal. Sometimes it's just macaroni and cheese, a vegetable, salad, you know, and sometimes it's nice beef. It's always a meal. It's always filling. It's always edible. There's never anything unedible. Then also there are showers there. There are lockers there that you can rent $5 a month.
Are lockers usually available? Or?
Sometimes it can be a couple of week wait to get a locker, but generally there's a turnover, so lockers can be got. You know, sometimes it is a wait, and you do have to pay $5 a month for the locker, but that's not a real large sum when you're thinking of the fairly large lockers. They have a telephone there. You can make local calls Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Yeah, sometimes there is a wait for that, but you know, they've got a rule of make a call, go to the end of the line if there's no, you know, other people waiting. If not, make as many calls as you need. It's also an address, 115 Coral Street. It's designated as a postal site, and anyone can receive mail there. Derek's great. He has a little room in the back of the house, and you go up to that and you ask, and if you've got mail or messages, the phone number's 458-9525. You can have messages left there for you. You know, those services are very good. But where I see the problem is that I see donations come in, and they go into the office, okay? And they're taken in there by people that work for HCRC and ISSP, and they are gone through, okay? And certain things are removed and taken by the employees as first choice, and then what is left over is put out for the homeless. Or some things are saved, you know, going to be used for this purpose or that purpose, you know. Neither here nor there. My problem is with the fact that employees have first choice of all donations who come in. Most of them have homes. Most of them, they are all being paid wages, okay? Why do they have first choice? Why are the cream off the top going to employees? My big question. Okay, and I feel that this also directly relates to why I no longer work for ISSP.
Now, did you bring your concern to Karen Gillette?
On the subject of the removal of the things by employees, no. I believe it was because I made a scene of it in the middle of the driveway in front of all the employees. Yes, I believe it was brought to her attention. No, I did not because this is just here at Christmas that it really hit me, and so I made a scene of raising my voice, because I was, you know, things...
When you made a scene, tell us what happened.
Well, you know, it was going in there, and stereos and things were coming out, you know, Walkmans, boomboxes, whatever, were coming out, and 6-7 coats were going with employees, and I said, what the hell is this? I says, you know, I said, this stuff is for the homeless. It is not for employees first.
Wait a minute, everybody has their prerogatives here,
yeah,
you know.
That's how it goes. Well, I don't think it should go that way. I'm sorry, I'm of the belief that donations for the homeless should go to the homeless first. We're working there. Yes, if we really need something and show a need, where you need to have a need for 6 jackets. You know, I don't know. You know, piles. I mean,
I got friends, man. They need jackets.
Yeah. Okay. Whatever you say. I still think that's. But it's a personal opinion. I admit that if I ran the place, this wouldn't go on. Okay. Cookies come in. Cream of the cookies are taken by employees first, and then what's left over is put out for the rest.
They don't really understand that kind of thing. You know. I mean, the people who are working need all the cookies.
Well, you know, I'm sorry. As I say, I think this all directly relates to why I'm no longer there.
How did that happen? Can you tell us what went on there? You were dismissed?
Yeah, I was fired. Point blank, fired. I've had a great time at the Armory. I've thoroughly enjoyed working with the Armory commander and the sergeants. But so you know that we are not up there alone. Two sergeants come up. What it is, one sergeant comes up with us when we get there. He works until like midnight. He goes home, another sergeant comes in, and he works till morning, okay? The Armory has opened a little room and a snack bar, sells candy, popcorn, sodas, extremely cheap for the homeless, you know, 50 cents a candy bar, 50 cents for a big bag of popcorn, and they pop it for you, you know. So the Armory people are doing wonders, okay? We have managed to, the other manager is named Sugar.
Is there hot water up at the Armory?
Absolutely. We have showers up there. They allow us to use the showers. Oh, yeah. It's great. We have also, Sugar and I, both purchased, paid for half of a VCR each. We have a little TV up there. She's the other manager. She tries to bring movies. I'd bring movies, you know, when we're on. We like to come, set up, try to show a movie for the folks, you know, besides their place. I've been known to go down and buy whole cases of popcorn and do popcorn and sodas, you know, and in exchange for...
I'm coming up to the Armory tonight, folks.
I'm not there anymore, so... Okay, I never, really, to my knowledge, never had a written complaint. Nobody actually ever came to me with, numerous allocades. In fact, people down there are talking petitions now and protests over the fact that I am no longer an Armory manager, because I would even take these so-called wingnuts, people that they said nobody could work with. The mental health guy has come over and he's just ecstatic. He's setting me up with their... meeting with their doctors and things so I can help them with their program, trying to help these people to take their medication, because even when they're in their delusions, I could talk to them. I don't have a problem with bringing those up and putting them to sleep next to me. I'll deal with them personally, okay? I would work from, like I say, 3:30 in the afternoon till 6:30 in the morning.
Paid for 5 hours, where?
Paid for 5 hours. Well, we had two other monitors also being paid for 5 hours, okay? And what we were supposed to do is break it up. The first person would work 5 to 9 p.m., 9 to 1, and 1 to 5.
You had to be on all the time.
But even when I took the shift of 1 to 5, I had to be the one to deal with everything that went on between lights out, 10 o'clock, TV off by 11. We generally turn off TV at 10, but if the movie ran a little past, we could run till 11 to finish watching the movie, you know. And then first thing in the morning, I was the one required to be up. In fact, this was part of what was claimed to be the firing, okay, when it came time that I was called in. 2 weeks ago, I took 3 days off, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I work Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights, okay. That week I was only working Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I took Thursday, Friday, Saturday off because my grandmother died. Okay, I was at the time told this was a problem. You know, when I came back, actually I was never told. When I came back, I was hearing all this about how I was being fired for taking those days off. And then word came back, although management never came and said a word to me. It did get past me. Oh no, Jeremy stood up and said, no, you're not fired. That everybody there knew my grandma, and not only did they say that I was going to fire me over, they passed out to everybody that my grandmother was dead. I mean, I get there and the whole lot knows, and there's all these other stories. My car blew up and all these other stories that were untrue circulating. Okay, so
what was the reason they had for firing?
Then it comes Wednesday, just this last Wednesday, just went past.
Several weeks later.
Right. I show up for work. I'm there a couple hours early, and I'm hanging around waiting, you know. It's also payday, so I'm waiting for my paycheck. And I get called into the office by Jeremy Jitka. And Jeremy Jitka calls me in and tells me that I had inappropriate behavior with, well, first he just tells me that I had inappropriate behavior up there and that I was being fired for it. And I said, excuse me, what did I do? And he left the office supposedly to go confirm with Karen and came back 15, 20 minutes later and tells me that I had inappropriate behavior with a first alarm guard and that they had complained and it was all over a sexual discrimination at the armory. And I said, excuse me, well, the only time situation we had a problem with that was 2 weeks ago. It wasn't dealt with by me, it was dealt with by Sean, the monitor, and it happened to deal with a girl who is slightly mental. And everybody know, even Karen said that to me. She admitted that later that, you know, this girl, that it was not a real thing. And
while you were on vacation?
Sean was the monitor on duty at the time. Okay, he brought it to me. We worked out a situation where, because this girl was claiming this guy was harassing her, we worked a situation out where Sean went and got the security guard, brought the security guard over, and in front of the security guard had her state she did not want Bo to bother her, and that if Bo bothered her, the security guard was going to have to call to have him removed. Okay? This is Sean, how Sean worked it out. He came to me. Yes, I approved it. There were a lot of things happened that night.
What was the inappropriate behavior that they supposed
to? So far, I've not been told. When he told me this, I told him that. I says, I feel that this is not true. Please, can I speak with Karen Gilletti and face this myself?
Dr. Karen Gilletti?
He again left the office for more than 30 minutes, and he came back, and he stated to me that first alarm called Karen Gilletti last night at home to complain about my inappropriate behavior, and that's why I was being let go.
So in other words, wait a minute, if he called last night, this was several weeks, 2 weeks after the incident.
Okay. I said, excuse me, that's not true. I was not at that time allowed to speak to Karen Gilletti. I said, fine, put it in writing. They put it in writing, made something up.